is engaged with some other activities in Parliament, and we hope that they've done their priorities right. And but I don't know after how many minutes. It's just an indication of late arrival. Then on that score, I think I must appreciate the members that have arrived in time, and then for us to be able to start with the briefing. Honourable members, I think we have got an agenda in front of us. I would have loved to propose that the consideration and adoption of our report on the workshop, as well as matters arising from them, together with the minutes, be the work that we do after the briefing of the department. We first discuss with the department, and then when the department starts moving, whoever moves to Baraka office, then they can do so ahead of us, and then while we are just disposing that internal work as committee, then we follow them. Can we do so? And then, thank you very much. Honorable members, I think on that score, then I need to call upon the DG of Home Affairs to start with the briefing to this committee on the immigration regulations, and of course their arrangements, plans of the implementation of the same. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. I want to start by apologizing for the minister. The minister is on leave, and the deputy minister has a COVID met outside, so I want to submit that apology. Secondly, Chair, there was a document which was sent wrongly. They sent the first draft, but as we have indicated, Chair, we apologize for that, but we'll be indicating that as we go through the slide, but it's not major changes. The purpose for us is to really give a background with amendments to the Immigration Act and some of the key changes introduced by the legislative amendments and immigration regulations and their impact, and status of the Immigration Amendment Act and the publication of the notices. And we're here to brief the committee on the key changes introduced by the legislative, the contents and provision of the immigration regulations, and the status of the Act. By way of background, South Africans embrace the full integration of South Africa into the family of nations after 1994. The DHL is issuing about 600,000 passports annually to citizens who want to travel abroad. Rising numbers of tourists contribute to our economy, and SA is a premium venue for large international events. In 2013-14, South Africans welcomed 13.5 million foreign nationals who visited South Africa as visitors, so we acknowledge the issue of tourism. The National Development Plan points to the urgent need to attract international migrants with critical skills. DHA is committed to facilitating the entry and exit of legitimate travelers efficiently and humanely. DHA also has a constitutional mandate to defend the country's sovereignty, security, and public safety. All immigration decisions must be based on an assessment of risk to South Africa. I'll be coming back to that. South Africa faces a range of risks and threats, from transnational criminal syndicates who smuggle or traffic people, drugs, protected species, and launder money. Legislative prior to the amendments were really based on a tick box compliance and not an effective screening of applicants. Abuse of refugee acts is also rife, with over 90% of applicants who only seeking economic opportunity. Often, those who overstay are bogus asylum seekers, seek to acquire legal status through marriages of convenience or acquiring identity documents fraudulently. Criminal syndicates work with corrupt officials and other South Africans to facilitate these illegal transactions. As a chair, is something which we really want to work on as a department. It was saying, yes, there is corruption from our own employees, but they also work with other people outside, as there is recently a case which was dealing with the DVA in Cape Town. The consequences for South Africa and for foreign migrants are serious. Among others, there is a risk to national security, social stability, and pressure on social services. If, Chair, we don't manage our borders properly, we end up with an influx in a variety of areas, social plans, our hospitals. The undermining of immigration laws also prevents orderly migration. This leads to extortion, abuse and exploitation of migrants who have fraudulent documents or not documents. We hear stories that in the farms, if people they don't have proper documents, they get employed. On the payday, they just get fired and they can't go anywhere because they don't have documents. They can be trafficked or forced into crime. Chair, that's why now we want to change, but it's just explaining the same background. This one was not inserted. Chair, we felt that it's important for us to explain diagrammatically how this we apply this immigration. To say, firstly, Mr. Smith applies for visa at a mission. Then I say visa and permitting systems, visa issued after proactive risk assessment and checks done by officials in mission and SA using DHA system. We're going to come back to this issue when we say why people are applying for visas outside the country. Then the next step is that now is offshore still there. We say that before now Mr. Smith depart from airport, we've got an advanced passenger processing system which now data is sent to operational center and is cleared to board after various checks. So our operational center at the bottom access to data from relevant systems, analyzes, assess risk against knowledge of countries and traveler, issues data reports and alerts, monitors stoplists, liaises with other departments and agencies. That APP has got a link to Interpol. If now we have got a record in the Interpol, then we can be able to pick that. And then it goes now to the border. Then Mr. Smith presents visa at OR Tambo. That's why I always explain that a visa allows you to move from your country up to the port of entry, which is where you'll be allowed to come inside the country. And then once we look at the immigration officer at your port of entry, is the one who do the first line checks. When I come to the issue of an appropriate certificate, I will come back to that issue. And then Mr. Smith comes into the country, and then if he overstays, then the act must be applied. Then the inspectorate must enforce this law and monitor that the system can show compliance. Then I say, what are the key principles here? It's really an integrated approach to make sure that everything about that traveler, with a single view of the traveler status and transaction, and then need to enforce the law and keep risks away from South Africa. I'm going to come back to that issue. So passing now, our immigration requires attention to the role of our SA missions abroad, bilateral and multilateral relations and agreements. If there's a visa waiver from country A with our country, we need to comply with that. We need to make sure that immigration issues, trends and strategies are always constantly monitored. And we want now at our ports of entry to use biometrics for travelers and cooperate on refugee matters. This is the second slide. So we felt that we need to explain this to the committee to say if we've got Joe who is traveling whether from all of Africa or Asia and is seeking opportunities to South Africa, what happens? Is that by against immunities and get a visa and a ticket. Or he goes to the neighboring country, jumps the border, gets picked up and taken to a safe house. Once he gets there, he knows that the first thing I must do, I must apply for an asylum seeker. And then he comes into the country, runs a small shop, links to illicit economy and with syndicates, and then the asylum seeker is rejected. What do? They get into the marriage of convenience. And then through that, he gets a residence permit and then divorces the wife and brings the real wife and with the whole family. And then Joe ends up as a South African citizen. That is what is happening. Then now you look at this thing, what is the impact of that onto the economy, society, and security? And then I was saying, as you said, that they pay those bribes from both sides. What are the security issues? You could have false identity, use weak processes and fraudulent documents of several departments, whether it's the Department of Health or Human Settlements and all that. The poor and uncoordinated data on the how, why, where, and what of max is not known. Poor monitoring enforcement by several departments and spheres of government. They gain gaps exploited in policies, laws, and processes of several departments. Then, shall we say, we felt that let's just give typical some of the cases we just as an example to say, and these are the real cases, but we put the names. Max is a migrant, was granted an asylum in 1988. In 1999, he married a South African woman. Whilst working at the embassy of the country he had fled from. And it happens, sir, you are in asylum, but you come into the country, you go and still work for the same government. It shows that they are not genuine asylum seekers. He received a permanent residence and was naturalized in 2008. Shortly afterwards, he divorces his wife and marries another woman with whom he already had a child. Then Anneli was 6 years when she was married into South Africa in a caput. She was beaten and abused. Teachers and social workers tried and failed to help. She ran away and spent her childhood on the streets. Anneli was raped and impregnated and finally entered into a shelter and was helped. She is currently living with a sister in the country. But Charlie, what is important now is to say, when we do that, is what we're saying now, then as a state, we have to fund those things. Como entered SA in 2002 on a study permit, which was valid until 2006, obtained a BCom from university in 2006, but in 2005, Moses says, hey, I might have to go back. Then he goes to a Home Affairs official and gets a fraudulent ID. However, he still goes back to his country of origin using the passport of his country. He's employed by a South African bank as a South African. And then, in 2009, participated in the elections. Miriam was issued an asylum seeker in 2010. The permit expired and she did not apply for an extension. She overstayed. This issue record show Miriam's application was adjudicated and dismissed as unfounded. Again, a corrupt official issued her with a Section 24 grants a refugee status. The refugee appeal board confirmed that they have never received an appeal application from Miriam. So I say, loopholes in the Immigration and Refugee Act were systematically used by syndicates to sell South African identity to citizens. Chair, but we want to also say, yes, we've got good examples of people who are coming to the country who give valuable contribution. It does not mean that all is bad with immigration. That's why we need a balance between the two. We've got people who are here as experts, critical skills, participating in the football, you know, these players, and in our economy, all that. Well, so let's come now to what are these key changes now which have been introduced by these legislative amendments. The Act and its rate have been amended to refer to all categories of temporary residence permits as visas. This is aimed at making a clear distinction between short stay and permanent residence permits. The only permits to remain as permits are permanent residence permits, which are no longer stay, which are longer stay in the Republic. All new applications for visas will be made at our missions in person. I will explain, just remember I said in that ring that we want to move the risk outside the country. And so when you come in person, the advantage was we are able now to take your fingerprint, we are able to take your photo, so we know who is this person who's coming to South Africa. Because in the past, we just get an application form in the airport, it's somebody else who comes in. So that is the reason for us to do that. And we're not the only country who's doing so. Countries are doing like that. And then, in present, this will allow implementation of risk-based approach to immigration management, including the verification of applicants prior to arrival in the Republic. Then the other one, important one, a change of status of visa terms and conditions from within the Republic will not be permitted for persons on visitors or medical treatment visas. Persons want to face such changes will need to submit applications from outside the Republic. So that's what was facing us as a country. People were coming into our country on a visitor's permit, and once they are here, they want to change the status. And there is also a wrong notion that if I applied, it means it is approved. But an application can be approved, can be disapproved. Now, if you are inside our country, you apply for this business visa, and then we disapprove, what happens? It means there is a cost to the state that when we take you back to your country, at whose cost? And then we start going to courts and all those issues. But if now we are attending your application at your country, if it is disapproved, we are still in your country. If it is approved, then you will. And then Chair was saying that a study visa now would be issued for a duration of studies rather than having to renew such visas on a yearly basis. That was the hardship which we are giving to the students. Now, if you are coming here to do medicine, we know a medicine degree is about 5 to 6 years. Why do we give you a one-year visa, but now we have to renew every time? Now we give you that visa for that period. Business visas are to be issued for businesses that enhance the national interest. That's why I said we've got a list of undesirable businesses, if you want to still come to that. In this regard, relevant departments, which is DTI and Department of Labor, will first assess the feasibility of the prospective business ventures, including compliance with labor laws and the benefit it will have for South Africa. Then, Chair, there's been a discourse in the media to say we, as a Department of Home Affairs, abdicated our responsibility to these government departments. We are one government. That is the Department of Home Affairs, there's a Department of DTI. That is one government. So I don't understand how we abdicated our responsibility as government. We are working jointly as a government. That's all what we have done. And then, sir, we have given a list of undesirable businesses not encouraged for investment and issue of visas, which was published in course of the Minister of Trade and Industry. Let me just quote one on those businesses. And, sir, currently in South Africa, we were allowing foreign nationals to participate in the security industry. Let me make an example as Home Affairs, what happened in our case. But without understanding, we get a business to come and install cameras in their building because we need that security. But who is installing those cameras? I've got areas there which I know are not for public consumption. But now I allow a foreign national to come and put a camera in that area, but under the pretext of that company. What happens next? So it can't be correct that we do that. And we know in terms of our laws also said, people are not supposed to be in the security industry as guards and all that who are foreign nationals. But now in another way, we open it in another window. So hence we are saying, but those businesses were already there and the people were there. It does not mean the law is not applied retrospectively. It applies going forward. An investment amount was also revised in consultation with the Minister of Trade and Industry. Chef, we are saying, as South Africans, we also have to participate in the economy. So if I am coming into this country with an investment of 200,000, why don't I think that South Africans can do that? Why are we not creating that opportunity? Then you are saying, if you bring 5 million and above, that is fine. But anything below that, let's give the opportunity to the South Africans. What is wrong with them? And then after considering the relevant departments and in view of the now enacted Employment Service Act, a decision was taken to repeal the quota and the exceptional skills work permit and to introduce a category of critical skills work visa to assist in the attraction of critical skills to the Republic. I said, when I come back to that, to say, what have we done with the critical skills? A critical skills was published, and then said an intra-company transfer work visa will be issued for a period of 4 years instead of 2 years. It's an advantage to the business. Instead of paying a repatriation deposit upon application for a visa, employers are now required to ensure and make guarantee that foreign employees will comply with the terms and conditions of their visas and leave the Republic upon termination of contract or employment. What was happening is that people would be coming through this visa, and then at the end, when it comes to expire, they remain in South Africa. But it was saying we're bringing people's particular skills for something. So they must do so, but at the end of that contract, they must go back. And during that period, they must impact those skills to the South African. Then, the Convention for Human Smuggling and Trafficking has now been included alongside genocide, terrorism, murder, torture, drug-related charges, money laundering, and kidnapping. That's why now, Chair, we are really strict now on this issue of the unapproachable certificate to say we want to avoid child trafficking as well as human trafficking. Because now in the past, people were not able to deal with that. But now, from that now, it has been included as one of the serious crimes. Then amendment has been introduced to provide that any person who overstays the duration of a visa or a permit for a particular number of days at a time is now listed as undesirable. Chair was one of the supports. Chair, the fine which people were paying, 1,500 to 2,000. They come to our country intentionally, overstayed, because I've got my 2,000. And what is worse, Chair, there was no way that you can demand that 2,000 when you depart. Because if you say to me, I don't have it, what follows? I must accommodate you. I must provide medication for you. I must say, child, I cannot afford as a state. Then you let that person to go back to his or her own country. Well, it's only 2,000 rand, he comes back and pay another 2,000 rand. It was not a deterrent. So now we say, if you are serious about our sovereignty, you must respect our laws. Come to our country as a visitor, and the law allows you to come and extend. Why are you ignoring the laws of the state? So we're saying, if that is not a deterrent, then the best way was to declare you as undesirable. Even now, just because of that, people are starting to comply. We can see the benefit of this, that people are coming, and now they know that they must comply, because if we don't, we're going to be declared undesirable. Well, Chair, Now, is there one you know, which explains each one of these things in a little bit in detail? So, the first one says that the regulations now require foreigners to be in possession of a machine-readable passport. But said that is not the decision of South Africa. In an international agreement, it says now, however, countries that are still issuing non-machine-readable passports, their citizens will be allowed entry until 24 November 2015. This is an, in terms of archive standard. It has been signed by all the countries of the world. So as from November 2015, you can't travel in the world with a handwritten passport. It's not for South Africa, it's for the world. So that's why, again, because that is known, it enhances security of the state and even for people living in South Africa. So that is what we are introducing. First applicants for visas, because they are in a permanent homosexual or heterosexual relationship, the Act requires a notarial agreement signed by both parties attesting that the permanent homosexual relations existed for at least 2 years. Chairperson, with your marriage, people bring a marriage certificate. Then you've got something to say this thing is illegal. Even in this case, that's all what we're saying. To say, bring something which you can bring to say, yes, that relationship exists. Because if you don't, people just be coming today and say, well, this is whereas there is no such a thing. For persons traveling with a child, the regulations require that the person must be in a position of an unabridged birth certificate and a consent affidavit from a parent or parents of the child authorizing the person to travel with the child. Just as we have heard the stories to say, there is no country in the world who is requiring this. This is a fact. When you're going to go to UK, they want you to bring your unabridged birth certificate. What is worse with that? Which is not like in South Africa. They want that unabridged birth certificate to be valid for 6 months. If it is 7 months, they don't accept it. They want it to be on a 6 monthly basis. Let me explain them of this issue to say they do not care. Ecosystems, Chair. When you go to UK, you apply through these visa facilitation centers. They take your unabridged, that unabridged birth certificate is put on the system, and then when you travel, you are like, you are not carrying it. But it's already in UK. When that child is in front of the immigration officer, you are traveling with this child, are you thinking that they don't look at it? They do, but it's just that to them it is in the system. They ask, who is this child? What is the passport of this child? They take it, they compare whether that unabridged birth certificate which you submitted when you were applying, is it the same with the one which is in the system? So, to say people that are not carrying the unabridged birth certificate, yes, they don't. And Chair, when we're doing also this, India is what I want to look at, whether we can do that in South Africa. What Indians do, they don't have in their passport as a parent, your kids are in there, some of the pages of the passport. So when you travel, you are a national from India, your kids are in the passport, so that they are able to verify that this child you are traveling with is your child. So that the only issues we have which we accept in South Africa now, but I need a manual system. So that's why now I want you to carry your copy of your unabridged birth certificate. But Chair, that is not for life. We are improving our systems. Probably in 2 years' time, I will have an electronic system which will allow that when you apply for your child, you bring your unabridged birth certificate. One of the things we are looking at for South Africans, we are exploring now that issue of saying, can we include the details of your children in the passport? So that when you come and apply for the passport, we print those. Then from there, we don't need you to carry the unabridged birth certificate, but the contents of the unabridged birth certificate, you are carrying them. They can be either on paper or electronic. So I think that is important for us to really explain this part, because it's what it was saying it is not. And we are doing that based on the children's age. I was saying, Chairperson, that I have received many calls when parents call you and say, where is my child? And I would say, yes, that child traveled with the mother or he traveled with the other spouse. And said, what kind of home affairs is this? So it's something which is really, really problematic for us. And also, Chair, it says this also inhibits tourism. Chairperson, when people say that, it's like when you go to a plane, it is everybody who's traveling is traveling with a child. Chair, we can go and look at the numbers. How many tourists are coming with it? How many we are traveling with the kids every day? So that is important, but at the same time, we are concerned about the security of the kids of this world. So then we said that the minister should designate a port of entry. Transit visas is another issue this one. Chairperson, in South Africa, we have in our neighboring countries. But Chair, people come to South Africa to OR Tambo, get to our neighboring countries, and thereafter they lose all the documents and they become asylum seekers. And as I don't have a document, I mean, then you ask yourself, how is a person from as far as China, as far as Pakistan, how did that person travel by foot to come to our border and start not having a document? So that's why now we want a transit visa. So that when you cross, you keep that information, you can lose your document, it's fine. But when you come back, you're going to be able to say, no. You crossed through OR Tambo on this particular date, you were using this passport. That's why we want Chair, fingerprints in our ports of entry. So that now with the fingerprint, I will always tell you, you are the same person. So that is the reason, Chair, why we want that. Visitors visa, I've said now, we really now no longer want people to pay us a 5,000 guarantee, because the ticket from UK is about 16,000 rand, and then I pay a guarantee of 5,000, I come here, well, I lose that 5,000, means nothing. So we say, bring a return ticket, because you are a visitor. So a visitor is a short stay, you come with the two tickets, after that you must go back, and they will know why it's too expensive. If I lose that second ticket, it's too costly, that losing a 5,000 rand was meaning nothing. So that's why now we want that requirement. Study visa, I've already said, Chair, we will issue it for a 4 year, for the duration of the study. In addition, it will allow now students, which we're not doing, to have a work, part-time work for a period of not exceeding 20 hours a week. So we are giving some positive thing on that. Then we are saying now you are coming here as a foreigner, participating in a program, we will give you that treaty visa. No business will be issued to business that has been declared undesirable. We've got the list. We won't issue that. Chair, this is another one. We say now businesses at least must appoint 60% of staff complement must be South Africans. What was happening, Chair, before? Businesses will come here, invest over that whatever millions of rands it is. But the requirement was that must employ five South Africans. Even those five were not described. So it means what the business were doing, said they will appoint a driver, they will appoint a security person, they will appoint a receptionist, they will appoint an HR person, and if you are lucky, another driver. So say, no, that is not correct. Where are we going to create these jobs? How are we going to do it? Swaziland employs 50% of South Africans. And check, we're not the only countries doing this. Other countries are protecting their economy, they are protecting their citizens, and they're saying, I mean, they're saying that charity begins at home. So that's what we're trying to say here. So what is wrong with that? Regulations reemphasize the issuance of crews, visa for officers without the members of the crew. We've got a crew member certificate. Then for a relative's visa to be issued to a foreigner, that's where is one of the risky permits we have. This relative visa, that now if I come to South Africa, I am working, and then I need to bring my long list of, I don't know, I mean, as an African, you know that my relatives is a long list, like up to the end. So we're saying now, if you want to, that such foreigner must prove of kinship in the second step. What we mean by kinship is that that relative relationship must be a father and a child and something, not a long list that my daughter of my aunt and all that. Yes, in my culture is my relative. But here we are saying, no, we can't get to that extent. Because, chair, these things go with certain consequences. Once you are here in South Africa, our constitution says you've got every right except the right to vote. So how costly would be that? We go to hospitals, we pump medicine, within 2 weeks, no medication. We build a human settlement houses, 1 million per annum, no dent we are making. So those are the things we are talking about. When visa and general skills visa companies work visa, Department of Labor will issue certificate confirming compliance with labor standards. Department of Labor is this government. We are not advocating to anybody. We are just working as government as we're supposed to be. But we are given certain responsibility between Department A and Department B, but that does not make us less government. Quota and exceptional skills permit has been repealed, and instead a critical skills work permit visa has been introduced. Let me emphasize this one, sir. If you come to us, you are that welder. So he explained it. I didn't understand that there is a difference between one welder and the other, but I will do so. But if you have that, I give you a work permit for 12 months without having a job, because we are saying I'm a critical skills. Whereas before, you need to get the job first and all that. Let's take the welder. In my township and in my rural area, I see welders. They will be pulling those bag bottles, and then I said they are welders. That is not the welder we're talking about. The one we're talking about is the one which is needed by the doping. You said, what are they now? Coded welders. You don't get them anywhere. Even ours in South Africa, because they get more money outside. They leave the country and go and work on that, and then we end up importing those welding skills. Then we're saying, you've got that skill like that. You apply, I give you the permit for 12 months before then you got a job. What I'm saying, within 12 months, surely that skill will grab it. And then a math teacher, yes, is still a scarce skill. It's not a critical skill. Because in South Africa, we produce math teachers. But when I don't have the adequate number, then I will deal with you as a scarce skill person, not critical. Corporate visa is what we're saying, 60%. Corporate works that will not be issued during the validity period. Department asylum transit visa. This one is what was the change as well. We are saying, chairperson, if you are an asylum seeker, please go and present yourself in our refugee reception offices within 5 days, because we want to protect you. Don't take so too many days. So within 5 days, you must approach our nearest refugee reception center. Hence, we are also in the process of moving our refugee reception centers next to the border. Permanent residents will also be issued to persons who possess critical skills, though not all holders upon consideration. You are saying if you had a critical skills, would be able not to continue to say you must wait for 5 years and all that. You will look at that skill and be able to issue that permanent residence. Then prominent persons do not qualify for a port of entry, visa or admission into the country. That's why I was saying China, we're moving our borders far by these APTs so that we don't even come close to our borders. As we said, now overstayers no longer pay, it will be declared. And as well as the, then what we want to check with this, as we say, Chairperson, we also argue that we are not introducing things because they are happening in a particular country. We are a country as we stand. But I can tell you now, Chair, you can't go to US and they ask you where you're going to stay and you stay under the bridge. You never. You must have an address. And the person who you're going to go and stay with must sign and say, I am receiving you, you're going to stay with me for that period. If that does not happen, they knock at the door. So what we need here is what we call the passenger name record. What we want is that now when you come to South Africa now, in the planes, now we'll be having this form, which will fill all your details. Yes, for now, Chairperson, we are manual. But going forward, we want to say that when we got that name record, we take it electronically, and then in the hotel whom you say you want to stay in, we're going to link with those systems. Once you get out of that hotel, that system must come and tell me that that plane has checked out in the hotel A, and then where are you? That's where we are going. Doing things which are not done by other countries. We do. When we go to those countries, we give that information. Chair, this is just to say now what at the X was published on the 26th of May, and then on the 10th of June, these are the additional information which we have given, and then in July, we also added this. In a nutshell, what we are saying here is that immigration is a complex matter. Immigration is something which we need. It will promote the economy of the country and tourism. However, it has got huge risks, and we have seen it. So we are trying to now with the amendments just to correct that. But the minister has already said we are looking at the overall paradigm shift in immigration. So during this year, we'll be working on the policies and come to Parliament at the end with the new. But at the moment, we're saying, let's close the gaps which we have. So the intention is not to kill the economy or tourism or anything else, but it's just to try and find a balance in between. And what we are doing, we have researched it. Other countries are doing it. Some of the things which are changing, they might not do it, but I think we're a sovereign state. If we feel that those things will promote what we're doing, that's what we do. So, Chair, I think that's what we wanted to brief the committee about on these amendments. So, thanks, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you very much, DG. And thank you very much for the elaborate presentation and explanation. If there is anybody that did not hear, will never. If there is anybody that is still confused, will never understand. And it has been seriously clear and being presented by the people that every day they are actually at the cold face of these activities and knowing exactly what happens, how they are responding, the challenges that they are coming against, and then say, these are the challenges that we are having. These this is how we respond to them. And then now, coming up with these corrective measures to close up the flaws, and this is what is in front of us, and they saying, this is what we want to do to safeguard the country, to facilitate, to make transit and come to South Africa and out of South Africa to be a lot more easy. That is what is now in front of us. Honorable members, I think you have heard when these were introduced that a lot of queries and cries that we came, and then now we have provided an opportunity, as we promised, that the department can come and really make us much more clear on the content. And now that has been done, we all understand clearly. And I think this is another opportunity for honorable members then to let me not separate points of clarity and discussion, because it sometimes makes us to fight unnecessarily. But moving forward, I'm sure then we'll be able to make differences of that. Let me just open the floor for the members to ask the relevant questions for the department to really clarify us more. But it is up to South Africans to safeguard their own country and make sure that their country is safe, even for their own children and the visitors that are legitimate and correct coming to the country to feel safe for a good foreseeable future. I've noted honorable saying Futi Nisi Gahi. It looks like I don't even need to note now. It looks like I'm just gonna go through all of you. I'm sure you may not have a problem, Honorable Hussein, to start.
Chair, thank you very much. And let me say firstly, I appreciate the fact that you scheduled this opportunity for us in a very short space of time after you requested. So let me recognize and appreciate that. Let me also say, Chair, that there are many issues and matters that are dealt with in these regulations that we don't disagree on. We completely agree that we need to tighten up the systems, and we subscribe to that, absolutely. And we must support it, and we must support the department and strengthen their hand whenever they want to better the systems that we have in place. And granted, there are many, many, many good intentions in the regulations. And I want to say that up front, and I say that specifically because of your opening comments, there are definitely very good intentions in the regulations, but it's the unintended consequences that for me is the issue here. You know, it's tantamount to, if there's a leaking tap in the bathroom around the corner here, we go and shut down the main for the entire parliament. The intention was good, but you don't realize the unintended consequences. And those are the issues that I want to focus on with the very little time that I have. Chair, the first issue that I want to raise is the issue of the impact on the economy and the jobs. Now, again, there are some very good intentions behind the regulations, but the unintended consequence is this. Over the last few years, the department has encouraged the development of private immigration companies. We've issued accreditation certificates to them. We've allowed them to operate because there was a market for it. And so over the years, you've had hundreds of private immigration companies establish themselves in South Africa. On average, they employ between 4 and 10 staff, on average. If you do the research today, now the new regulations introduced VFS Global. They're the guys that you must now go to if you want to apply for a visa. And that's now created a monopoly in the visa industry and made all of these hundreds of immigration companies, private immigration companies, redundant, because they no longer have a role. And that impacts on hundreds and hundreds of private people who were employed who now are not going to have a job, and that's coming. So the impact of it you will see in a short space of time. The question I ask is that, has the department seen this happening? Did you do? I know you've done no regulatory impact assessments, which surprises me as well. And have you done an assessment on this before introducing the regulations? A number of these unintended consequences would have been able to be prevented. This is one of them. Chair, the second issue is the issue of the unabridged birth certificates. Again, very good intention. Completely understand the intention to reduce child trafficking, all of those things. But here again, what you've done is that you're treating innocent people as the criminals. Because the problem is not about the unabridged birth certificates and the requirement for it. The problem is the department's ability to be able to issue those unabridged birth certificates. That's the real problem. And with respect to the DG has not addressed that. The department's unable to issue the birth certificates. I mean, the DG referred to about 600,000 passports that are issued in a year. Granted, there are probably much more travelers out there than those 600,000. And the DG is quite correct that not every person travels with a child. But I would encourage the department chair to actually do an assessment and a study on exactly how many children are traveling in and out of the country and what impact that is having on our children. Now, we can sit and have these conversations, but unless you've got the genuine evidence in front of you through proper research that's been done, only then can you actually make a genuine real argument. And I'm afraid I have nothing forthcoming from the department, although I've asked, have you actually done this study? Actually look at what the assessment is and the impact is. And there is information out there, and I would really encourage the department to go and have a look at it. Now, I understand if the DG says that, well, in 2 years' time we'll move to a paperless system and we'll be able to issue the unabridged birth certificates much faster and it will come in 2 years' time. Then why not introduce that specific regulation in 2 years' time when you know that you're capable of doing it and dealing with it and the turnaround time it can happen in 24 to 48 hours? So we agree on the principle, but it's the implementation part that I'm not sure that the department is able to deal with in time. And already since the introduction of this, there are a number of travelers who are unable to get their unabridged birth certificates for their children in time to be able to travel. Then, Chair, quickly I'll come to the student visa issue and the principle of scarce skills and critical skills. And again, good intention, allowing people to get a study visa for the period of time of what their study is. I think it's a brilliant concept. But recognizing that you have critical skills and scarce skills, you issue the visa for a student, why not also consider issuing a visa for a longer period of time for a student who is studying towards a critical or a scarce skill? It makes absolute sense to me. But what the current regulation is saying, if you come into South Africa, if you study medicine, the moment you're done, you go back to your country. My argument is saying that if you know that is a particular critical skill, why not do what we can to keep that skill here if they're using the South African resources, educational resources, to be able to develop themselves? So they come in here, they study here, and then we chase them away to go and serve another country. That doesn't make sense to me. Share the visitor's visa. Now, I take very clearly the comments that the DG has made is that other countries are doing this as well in terms of biometrics and fingerprints and all of that. The point I put on the table, Chair, is that we mustn't do what other countries are doing. We must try and do it better if you want to stay ahead of the tourists in international markets. Now, I get it that you want to get somebody's photograph and you want to get their biometrics. And I completely understand that you want people to apply in person as the reasons for that. But there are also many countries in the world that are providing online visa applications to make it more attractive and easy for tourists to come into your country. But if the problem then is about appearing in person purely for your biometrics and your photograph, surely you can capture that when the person lands in our subway. It's not going to take you an hour to take a person's photograph, capture it in front of you. I mean, you've gone to the department a a number of occasions, and security companies, when you enter, they take a good photograph of you. It takes a couple of seconds. And to take the biometrics, it takes a couple of seconds. So it can be done. It definitely can be done. And we don't just disagree on the intention behind it. We completely understand that every country needs to know the movement of people entering the country. But it's the system that you're introducing that's the problem. Chair, on the business visa. Now, the point that was made, again, I think the intention is very good. But all of us in this parliament have waxed lyrical about the importance of growing the small business market. Now, you've set a restrictive amount of 5 million rand in order for you to open a business here in South Africa. What about the small business? And I get the point that you want to reserve that for South Africa. Completely understand that. But in the absence of that happening, and when there is already a demand for foreigners to open smaller businesses in South Africa, then surely you will be able to meet that demand and create an opportunity for foreigners to come into South Africa, open up smaller businesses, create employment, you will reduce the unemployment in South Africa in a very short space of time in the absence of South Africans themselves doing it. And of course that will also lead to competition, and that will spur on South Africans to open similar businesses and grow people. Now, if you look at the current regulations, there are, if you want to open a business in South Africa, there are 11 conditions for a new business. And if you're currently in South Africa as a foreigner operating a business, there are 13 conditions. So the business visa regulations are also starting to become more and more cumbersome. Although granted there's some very good intentions behind it, but surely the department must find a better way to be able to lay down the red carpet for foreigners to come and make investments in South Africa. But what this regulation is doing actually is the complete opposite. It's introducing more red tape. The last point I would raise to you. The one which I think creates an enormous amount of frustration and anger is the issue of the undesirable status. And on this point, Chair, I must give credit to the department for the assistance that they've been providing to myself on a number of things that we sent to the department. They've been extremely helpful, and my credit there goes to Mr. McKay's department, which has been doing a fabulous job. Sometimes we get a problem with it, but they deal with it as quickly as possible. I take the reasons, and I completely understand why you've introduced this. But there are innocent people who are being punished, and also largely because of the department's fault. Let me give you, you've put a number of stories there about Joe and Annalie and all of these people. But there are lots of Joes out there, innocent Joes, who come into this country, who apply for an extension for a visa, whose visa is pending, and because the department is unable to deal with it, and we're not talking about 3 or 4 days, we're talking months here. They've applied and waiting for months for the visa to be extended, and then they have now the choice but to go to move. And when they do leave the country, they then get this undesirable thing. And then you now shift the focus onto the traveler to say, you've been marked an undesirable, now you must go and appeal. The solution is very simple. You must have a list of people who have applied for an extension of your visa. Share that list with port control at all times where the other airports where people leave. And before you stamp somebody's passport as undesirable, check whether that person is on that list of applications. It's as simple as that. But the department's marking anybody who goes beyond a day or so as undesirable, and you're treating the innocent people as well. Chair, I'll give you another 100, but I will stop there and I'll wait for the response. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Anyway, also I think we have scheduled ourselves to be leaving for Barack office around 11, so everybody can see the time. And then we don't have the whole day, and we will for the meeting this afternoon as well. Honorable Chairman.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm not going to be long because some of the question has been asked. But I just want to ask, according to the 600,000 passports that are issued, is there a possibility that we can issue more of those passports? And then the issue of visitors in South Africa, are we looking at getting more visitors since 2013-14? If yes, and are they more for business? The other issue, Chairperson, is the issue of corruption, the officials that are corrupted. How many of them have been found and called to books? The last issue I want to talk about, Chairperson, is the issue of the unaddressed statistics. I know my colleague has touched on this, but according to the department, the turnaround time is about 90%. there are people who are still waiting more than 90 days. Some of them, they started applying from February this year, and they didn't get any answer. Now they've been sent to official dealer to dealer. Nothing has come to them. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure whether we could take a cue from Honorable Christian. I think that will assist us. Because the first one, we need to go back to, then we will have to be there on the thing. Honorable Rafiki.
Thank you very much, DG, for bringing more sources and measurement for people to respect South Africa. Most importantly, the emphasis on the unabridged certificate. You know, protecting the innocent, the vulnerable group, that is the children. I think that is a very important step. On page 18, bullet number 2, on the study visa, I think it cannot be just a blanket kind of a visa for 5 years, especially the people who are doing medicine. I don't think that even if those people are studying medicine for 5 years, some of them are going to perform within that 5 years. I'm giving a suggestion that if those people can also bring, you know, how do they fare at school, you know, at the university on a yearly basis. Because it cannot be just a blanket thing of people being given 5 years to do medicine and being given this visa for 5 years. And I'm also saying that, taking the cue from Honorable Hossein, if we can also think that after the 5 years of study, if they can do some community service, you know, because they've been using the resources of South Africa. I think really the emphasis, there should be no shortcuts, especially with these regulations. Biometrics, it must be a must. I thank you, but that was an excellent presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mason.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would also like to join the queue in welcoming the presentation by the DG. It's a long presentation in a short space of time, but I think I will try to limit my questions because some of my colleagues have already covered me and we've got another image outside of the computer. Chair, we all know that Home Affairs is about security. I really appreciate that children's safety is also being taken care of. So sometimes our kids become victims unnecessarily. My question first is that maybe can the lady, the DG, explain about the first country rules and what makes it so difficult for us as South Africans to apply those rules. When we checked to the asylum started reaching with the total alarming number of 34,000, and this number is only for those who reported. What about those who did not come forward? It shows, Chair, that our country is really corrupt. I understand, Chair, that we cannot be a wealthy South Africa surrounded by a pool of poverty. But I think really something must be done about this. I would like to know from the DG what measures are in place maybe to improve the poor monitoring and enforcement by several departments and spheres of government. Seemingly, Chair, there is no synergy and coordination among the departments and spheres of government. Maybe the DG did not come here on the question about the people applying for visas outside the country. Please through you, Chair, maybe if the DG can unpack the chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a concern with this new immigration rules. Much as it will be important that people should apply in person, I wonder to which extent it is practical, considering countries like India and China, their geographical spread. As a matter of fact, we are not informed as this committee what contingency plans are there in a country like China to ensure that the application in person does not have unintended consequences. The same applies for India. Secondly, we are not also told what are the special arrangements for known investment cities around the world. To which extent, as a government, have we identified those cities around the world where much of investments come from and make sure that those cities do have the facility to apply in person? You speak of Shanghai in some of the world cities around the world. As to whether have we targeted them, or we just put the office in Beijing and forget about the rest of the cities. I also have a concern about the uncertainty that results from the implementation of these regulations. The continued engagement between and among the authorities is sending a message there that the government is not resolute, is not decisive, really it does not read from the same page. We are told of meetings after meetings between the Minister of Home Affairs with other departments explaining these rules, and these rules and regulations come from cabinet. But nonetheless, as ancestors of society and stakeholders keep on complaining about these rules, we see meetings between the Minister of Home Affairs and Minister Derek Hanekom. And there will be different messages that are read from such meetings on the rules and regulations. The issue of retaliatory actions by other states, somehow we need also to be briefed the extent to which we should expect retaliatory actions by other states on how we intend to deal with the immigration regulation as applicable to their own citizens. And I see that maybe I may have come late, but the presentation doesn't tell us about the Zimbabwean issue, the people of Zimbabwe who are around, and we hear the minister quite coming out openly on the issue of the special dispensation on the people of Zimbabwe. And lastly, we are not rid of any exception to the rule to address pertinent issues that may arise in the implementation of the regulations to cover up
for unintended consequences of the regulations. Thank you.
Honorable Nancy.
Thank you very much, Sean. Chair, I wouldn't be long, but I appreciate to what the department is saying. And I want to write on Honorable Gatti that we must be resolute and decisive and implement. Sooner we do that, the better. I've been a member of parliament for the past 10 years, and I've been in the security cluster throughout. And we've been complaining about what we are seeing. Already, what the department is attempting to address is something that already is inside the country. War can take place in tomorrow here. That it could be very difficult to control because everything is inside here. Go to this one. Go to this in reverse. Go to this security company. Start down the street, long street, all here in Parliament. Go around. It's almost honorable that when you closed Parliament last week, there was nobody to stop you. So the security guard left you to come inside. So for the department, I want you to tell you what I want you
to do.
Let me finish another look at the about it outside. Honorable members, the department, what I'm taking to what we are saying, security of our country, security of the children, security of the citizens. To me, that's what is important. If you are being targeted against at home, that by then. And these other things, unintended consequences, those are the things that you need to look at it. How are you going to make sure? I think the members, while they are asking you, but they are thinking, be careful of these other things because they are protocols. In the national protocols, that we must respect. On that score, I would say these members are not asking you any question to answer. But they are advising you that there might be this thing, so we should need to close quickly. You don't say you are closing these loopholes on one hand, you open others. It will be very important for the planning so that you can move quick. But the sooner you implement it, better. Otherwise, I'm worried about what we understand as we've been in the security class and what we are seeing that anything can happen in this country. Not to go back to the best way of operating, but on the basis of what all the foreigners are asking. One question. If you are addressing the thing of marriages that already have been done in the past 10 years or 15, when are you going to start implementing? Are you going to say those who have married maybe 10 years back? I'm just trying to think. How are we going to correct other things, particularly this one of marriages that already have been done? How are we going to address the issue of people who have got citizenship already that they've attained it fraudulently? That's all what I'm interested to know. If there is any way, I don't know if there's any way. Someone might refer you back to say Asians have been here for quite some time. And others might prepare us to say even white people when they got here, they did the same. Others might refer you back. So I'm just trying to think, how can we do this as South Africans so that we make sure that at least we are trans. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mayor.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, let me apologize, Colleague Chairperson. I was just late in another meeting, which I was not planned for. I'm sorry for coming late. But to the department, I say thank you. I think you are responsible to the cries of millions of South Africa over years. People are saying, what are you doing with this uncontrolled immigration? People in, people out, everywhere. And I think really for the people of South Africa, who are the biggest stakeholder among stakeholders, I think this will do good. The issue of unintended consequences, I think should not prevent immediate or planned implementation of the department. The reason I say that is because where there are problems, you can increase the resources, you can increase capacity to address the specific problems. Perhaps people that are saying that there are problems or delays in the issuing of visas and in the issuing of documentation, I think that should not stop us from implementing immediately. These inputs have been well considered. The decisions have taken years to be made, and now it's time to implement. There are teething problems in every project, but you cannot say because there are teething problems, you are not going to have threats. Let us go on, let us implement. Despite the teething problems, we are going to attend to teething problems. That would be my suggestion, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for the questions that have been posed. And it looks like there is a high level of patriotism that I'm reading through the questions that came out. And also, it looks like there is a serious appreciation of the regulations and much of the problem. It is some of the things that members are worried that while implementing these new regulations may lead to certain things which I think the minister said the door is open for those that are actually coming across these things to come and raise them so that they can improve the systems. And Honorable Gadi, I think the DG, if he's prepared, and then will actually give you a small response to the Zimbabwean project. It's a central development project, I think, of the Zimbabwean. Mr. DG, take us on.
Who will answer the questions with the team? I will try and be quick, as the chair has already indicated the constraints on time. I want us to deal with the three issues. Let's deal with this issue of private immigration companies. Chairperson, in South Africa, there is no law which says you must go to a lawyer to represent you in court. You can represent yourself if you want to, but you go to a lawyer because you understand what are your issues. Immigration practitioners, Chair, there is no law which is prohibiting the practitioners to operate in South Africa. There's no law like that. It still says, if for me I want to apply for my permit, I will go to a practitioner. But that practitioner will accompany me to go to submit my permit. Exactly like how lawyers are doing. You don't appoint a lawyer and say, on the day of the court, I'm not there. So it operates like that. Exactly like that. Practitioners are still allowed. They go to our visa facilitation centers. They still submit the applications, but the applicants must come because I want a fingerprint and a photo. So that's the operational. They charge. I mean, you know, even the case which you have here in the Western Cape, it was a lawyer who was taking applications from the applicants. So I don't know this cry where they say now by doing this, it will do that. Let's come to VFS. VFS has got nothing to do with what the practitioners must do. It's going back exactly on what the honorable member is raising. Home Affairs, we've realized that we can't want to be participating in a global village, but our systems are still at a traditional one. We won't be able to participate in to get those skills. So the reason why we appointed that, fortunately now today, the committee is going here at Barra Street. We're going to see what has been an advantage for us in the department just by changing that. So we'll be able now to Chair, it was not thinkable. It was not thinkable in South Africa that we can issue an ID within 7 days. The ID book was taking 180 days. Yes, we're in this country. But today you get your smart card within 7 days. Chair, it was not, it's not thinkable now that we issue a business permit within 2 days. But we're going to do it because of the systems which we're implementing. So that's why we really support that the committee is saying to us, let's implement these things, teething problems, but we're aware of it. Let's come to unabridged certificate. Chairperson, an unabridged certificate, you get it from the spot. If your child is born from April 2013, you get your unabridged certificate on the spot. You must go to the hospital today and get a child who's born there. Once you get the unabridged, you get it on the spot. What you are talking about is the unabridged certificate of the past. I think we must make that distinction so that is understood. If your child, that's why Chairperson, we are here, we think that the Parliament is also supporting us on this, register your child within 30 days. And when you have done that, you get your unabridged certificate on the spot. So what we are talking about here is those children whom at that time this issue of registering children was not an issue. So that's what we're dealing with it. And we're working on it hard. What we have checked on the system will give that data. We are looking at about 2 million children who are traveling per annum. About 2 million of those. So we're putting processes. Minister is going to be announcing. We recall that the minister already said an unabridged certificate we will require from 1st of October. So minister is going to come back and address, but again, we are talking about those children who are in the past. Children born today, they get their unabridged certificate in the spot. But it was not like that in South Africa before, but because of these changes which we are putting in the department. I wanted to also get to respond on this issue, which we have raised this thing often. I think it's also important to say these regulations were not taken to the cabinet only. Chairperson, the law is the responsibility of Parliament. These regulations which we're talking about were passed in this, but it's just that there was a change now of Parliament which we accepted. Otherwise, if there was no change, the members who have gone through this, they would say, no, these are the regulations which we passed. So they were passed here. So I think that when the ministers, they meet, it's all on the basis that the Minister of Tourism last time was the Minister of Science and Technology. The Minister of Home Affairs now was the Minister of Public Enterprise. So for them now, they need just to understand the processes in that. So it was not something which we are, it's not that the cabinet is not reading from one page. ZSP Chairperson said we must start real. I think it needs another time, but in a nutshell, is that the cabinet has approved for the extension of the Zimbabwean permit for 3 years, and then now we are starting receiving applications by 1st of October up to end of December, and then now all the permits will expire by end of December. And then we issue the permits for 3 years, which is 2015, 16, 17. Those permits are expiring, and check they are not renewable. The permits are.
Can you just clarify us? I think you started by saying there's been given an extension.
Yes.
Is it an extension or is it a new project?
It's a new project. So I said that one now comes to an end by December 2014. And now they apply. Then now what has happened now, those who applied at that time, something new. So if now we have issued 245,000 permits in the last process, we'll only deal with that number, not more. And then now those permits are also only for 3 years. They are not renewable. And then between now and the third year, we're saying people must regularize themselves according to the permitting regime. So, but yet, Chair, as you said, is something which we need to come on to dictate, but I'll just mention it. I'll give now to JK and the theater to deal with the other issues.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you, DG. I think it's important just to accentuate one issue raised by Honorable Hussein. The repeal of Section 46 that does away with the immigration practitioners in law. Now, all that it does is it says self-regulate and no more regulation by the department. That is, they continue to exist, it's business as usual, and we do not foresee any massive job losses in those areas because they have been, as of now, they are operating in those particular areas. All that we have said is we do not recognize you in our law and you will have to self-regulate. I think that is important that we need to state that. It didn't say, it did not outlaw immigration practitioners. They are still there, they exist, and they still have customs, as the DG has explained. Chairperson, I also think we just need to clarify something. The new regulations did not bring into being VFS. There's no way in the regulation stating that we shall now have a VFS company or something like that. There's no way. It is an operational matter that the department embarked on in terms of to introduce efficiencies within the visa application system. And we use different models, and the VFS model was one of it. It has nothing to do with the regulations at all. Whether the regulations have changed or not, our operational model going forward is still meant we would have introduced this type of model. So I thought I would just clear that. Otherwise, we will link VFS to the immigration regulations, which is not, they are not linked. They are not linked at all. Chairperson, with regard to the study visa, we definitely do not chase people away, and it was never our intention to chase people away. When they qualify, they are free to apply for another permit. They are free to apply for a long stay permit because of their scarce skill, if they do have it, or their critical skill. So if you are a medical doctor and you have finished, completed your study, you are free to apply for another permit. You are not, without going home or leaving the country. Let's be clear, it's only two types of permits that requires you to leave the country to reapply in your home country. It is the visitor's visa, or the tourist visa as we call it, and the medical treatment visa. Those are the two visas that you need to leave the country to apply from home to come. So if you are a scientist, a medical doctor, or any other skilled person studying within the area which we classify as a skilled, critical skilled area, you could apply for such a visa to remain in the country, and we would welcome it. And also we are looking at the introduction of partnering with other government departments who actually have a database of all students studying in the country, what type of studies they do, whether they are critical to our economy, and whether we could offer such people proactively permits to remain in the country, so that it has an impact on our economy. Chairperson, the children traveling, do an assessment and study on how many children travel in and out. We definitely will do that assessment to get the number of children. But what we are trying to do here is really not to limit the number of children coming to South Africa. We are trying to manage it in terms of the huge. There are United Nations publications that you can go read that state that South Africa is a hub, in fact, a sending country for child trafficking, as well as human trafficking. and it's been recognized as such as by the United Nations. Clearly, we should be doing. We have a Children's Act. The Children's Act now requires that children are protected when they are traveled because of their vulnerability. And all we are trying to do in our FTA is to protect those children, our children and foreign children coming into our country. If there are unintended consequences here, we do acknowledge them, but we need to have a look at what is the greater good and whether it is best is allowing trans children being trafficked in and out of South Africa or being open and allowed kids just to go move in and out of the country. We need to have a look at what is the greater good. Chairperson, with regard to I could just share with Honorable who is saying that we do have online applications. For the first time, we now have in South Africa online application for visa application. And it came about a couple of months ago. But we would still require you to come in and have your biometrics taken. Now, if you are in the business of immigration, there are a lot of anomalies that you see happening and abuses of the immigration system. There are certain countries where you would require people to give their biometrics in the country of origin because what we are trying to do, and as the model is explained by our Director General shows, we are trying, our model of risk management of immigration says we've got to export our borders, which means your border is starts now in the foreign country. And that is where you do your immigration clearance. Let me explain a bit. I think it's important, Chairperson, if I may, and with your indulgence. We had in the past, and sometimes it still happens, where we have people trafficked into South Africa landing at OR Tambo. And as soon as they land, and as soon as they get to immigration and you refuse immigration, there is a lawyer there that says, you have my client there, why are you not letting him or her into the country? And when we refuse to do that, in about a half an hour or an hour's time, the lawyer is there with a court order instructing us to enter that person into the country. Never mind who the never mind the undesirability. So what we are trying to do here is to clear people in their home country so that we are able to stop them traveling to our country and cause harm to it before they leave the country. Also, there is the issue of impersonation. The person applying for a visa in the country of origin is not necessarily the person entering your country. So you need to make sure that the person that applied for the visa by taking his biometric at home country and taking his biometric again at the point of entry, which is our ports of entry, it corresponds and you could link that it is the same person that applied for a visa in the home country. Now, we could use a lot of examples. I think the DG tried by using some. And some examples are if we had biometrics taken at our missions abroad and at our ports of entry, it would stop a whole lot of nefarious people who are currently in court in South Africa from entering South Africa. Now it is for that reason that we require the fingerprints and the biometrics to be taken at country of origin as well as when you enter the country. With regard to the undesirable status, agreed, and we will look into the matter, Honorable Hussein, for you, Chairperson. We are working off our backlogs that we have gotten. We should be done with those backlogs in a month or two's time. And with our new online application, the efficiencies are already there, and people are issued their visas now. Within 4 to 6 weeks, they receive their visas, and I think it will be a thing of the past. But what is important about this is that it has highlighted the extent to which European nationals abuse our immigration law in South Africa by entering into South Africa and staying here indefinitely. And when they leave, all they do is they say, well, what's the fine? They pay and they back tomorrow. And they actually stay here permanently because they do not require a visa. So he travels in and out, he pays, if he is fined, he comes back again and stays here permanently without applying for the necessary visa. And I am sure he's also employed in South Africa illegally and lives in South Africa illegally. What we have seen now is a deterrent. They are now coming out, they are saying we've overstayed, they are returning to their country, and they are applying for the correct permits to come into. So if there was anything corrective, we are seeing it happening now by people respecting our immigration law and abiding by the rules. Chairperson, I'm mindful of time, so I'm really just moving to. Oh yeah, the issue of. And I think Honorable Garvey also raised the issue of how do we deal with the unintended consequences like that, which taken into consideration large countries like China, like India, where people need to come and apply personally. We are in discussion with the Chinese government for us to be able to extend our footprint in China, so that we at least have a visa facilitation center in all of the provinces so that people do not have to travel very far to reach those centers to be able to apply for visas. We are in discussion with them and they will be, we are looking at possibilities of doing that in China. With regard to India, it's a bit easier and we are looking at extending to the major cities a visa facilitation center there. Indeed, the main centers of cities like in China, we do not only have a presence in Beijing, but we have a presence in Shanghai as well. And like I said, we are looking at extending our footprint there. So we are taking into consideration the issues that you raised, and we hope that we will be having a greater footprint in these sending countries or countries that are critical or economically to us. The Honourable Minister, with regard to the issues of the first country rule and why is it so difficult to apply this rule, for the benefit of the House, the first country rule relates to refugee, our refugee law. And internationally, the international protocols around refugees state that when you flee your country, you need to seek refugee status in the first safe country. So if you have a look at people traveling from the Horn of Africa, for instance, the first safe country would be, let's say, Kenya or Tanzania, and they would apply, they should be applying for refugee status there. But we have people moving right through the length and breadth of South Africa, coming to South Africa to apply for asylum. And that is the issue, I think, that Honorable is raising. And it becomes, and we've also seen, and experience has showed that the refugee, because South Africa, we do not have an encampment policy, where we encamp refugees, we find that the refugee camps to the north of us are empty, and those people are moving south to South Africa to apply for refugee status in South Africa because of our liberal law with regard to refugee management. And this, it does become difficult for you to apply this rule if you do not have countries working together on this, sharing of databases where they do exist. So what we are doing within our multilaterals and bilaterals, we are working on this issue to see that we start sharing information on illegal migration, that we are starting to link our databases so that we can find out whether if someone comes to biometrics, if someone comes to apply in South Africa, whether he has not already been, whether he is not already a refugee in another country to the north of us. So we are seized with this issue on our own ministry in our multilateral and our bilateral, and we hope that you will soon find a solution of how we work together as a region as well as a continent on the issue of refugee management.
I think, Chairperson, with regard to, I think the last issue I will comment on is the issue of Honorable Nancy, that fraudulent marriages, how are we going to correct it? Honorable Nancy, we are setting up a team, and already we are seeing the fruits of this as we are becoming more open and communicating around the issues of fraudulent marriages and warning South Africans about that. We have seen a bit of a decline within that particular area. Also, we are investigating now all our, the household notes as well, that through complaints that they might be receiving, that the permits that are taking longer to be adjudicated in the Department of Home Affairs are two types of permits. They are the relative permits, and it is the one that is needed to manage. Because we have now instructed our inspectors to go and actually have interviews with these people. It takes us a bit longer in issuing the visa, but we are now a bit thorough so that we know that when you do issue a relative visa or a spousal visa, it is because a relationship does exist. And it does take us longer, and I could rather take all criticism that we're taking long with that visa, but it is a high-risk visa, and we need to do it in that particular way. Also, we will be re-looking and going back to all past one's issues, and we are setting up a project that will be looking at all past spousal visas that we issued and permanent residents that we issued, because it is permanent residence that leads to citizenship later through naturalization, to be able to investigate whether there was any impropriety in issuing such a and thank you, Chairperson.
The last one I want to respond was only this is of a small business.
Chair,
South African government even created a Department of Small Business. Let's go and encourage South Africans to be entrepreneurs. That's why we put that limit at 5 million. We are creating that environment. South Africans go and open small business and participate in the economy of the country.
Thank you very much for the
Chairperson, sorry, please. There's a response that a question that has not been responded to. The issue of should South Africa brace itself for any retaliatory actions by sister states whose citizens are being subjected to our immigration rules and regulations?
Yeah, I wonder whether the department can answer that one, because that would be a consequence.
Yeah. Sir, countries are sovereign states. I would have right to do. Let's take Kenya as an example. Kenya, SADC, took a decision that there must be a visa waiver around the countries in the SADC. But the countries who says, no, I won't do that because of the security risk of that country. For instance, Kenya, when they come to us, we said, no, we cannot agree that we're going to have a visa waiver for Kenya with all those security concerns, which all of us were aware of it. Then they come and say, oh, if you don't do that, we want visas for South Africa. Let's take UK. UK imposed a visa regime to us. We have not done that. So countries are set at their own. So it is not a reservation, it's what they look for their interest. If they do so, it's fine. But now as we speak, when you go to UK, you pay for a visa. But when people from UK come here, they don't pay a cent.
I think from the questions that Mr. Honorable Sutherland raised, there is one question I'm not sure that has been answered. On the corruption within the Department of Home Affairs, whether there is any action that has been taken to anybody. I think you raised that question, and I'm not sure whether I was sleeping or not to hear the answer.
Chair, didn't respond on that. Chair, we are working very hard on the issues of corruption with our employees. Even here now in the Western Cape, it was there's a case which was dealing with one of the lawyers here. And we are saying, if in that process our employees were involved in it, we deal with it equally, whether you are internal or we are external. So it's something we should put pressure on it. And even with these systems which are coming up with now, they're going to be able to help us as a department to deal with those issues. That was one of the considerations why we cut the interface between our employees and the clients. That's why I wanted that visa facilitation, so we cut that link. So it's something we should deal with it. We've got cases, and we deal with them.
Okay. I think as well, this new regulations is an attempt for the department also to deal with fraud that has been going around. Honorable members, I think we just need to know that South Africa is not the same as many of other countries out there. Our democracy makes us to attract all sorts of people to come here rather than to other countries. So our systems may not be exactly the same with others who are just dealing with ordinary people that are just visiting. When we have those people that may be visiting with us, other intentions that are not actually legal. So our system has to be a little bit improved. Generally, I think as a committee, we do appreciate the and support the intentions that the department is actually trying to attend to and resolve. And of course, as we have heard, some members are raising issues which, as you move forward implementing these regulations, you must take cognizance of them and actually make sure that they don't impede the implementation of the regulation. And of course, is that those kinds of issues that members have raised that need your attention, that will attract our committee to really sit on your neck and doing oversight to make sure that those things are resolved in time and correctly, so that then we really, all of us as South Africans, protect this country. And I think also it's, many members actually were saying that you should have started implementing this long ago, because at long last, it looks like now it's, our government has opened its eyes to some of the things that have been happening that needed to be resolved. Then those issues, of course, as I've said, of unintended consequences, then you are called upon to take them home and make sure that they don't happen. They don't happen, and so that you are able to move forward. Honorable members, we have got serious kinds of time, especially for the visit to Mara. And I really wanted to also propose that the report and the minutes that we had to deal with after the particular presentation, then we consider that in the next meeting, so that then you can be able to actually visit Barak and inform yourself on what is actually happening. Is that the total supported? Agreed. And then if it's agreed on that term, honorable members, I can also ask a favor from the committee. I've got a very pressing meeting now.